Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices. I'm your host, Fred Monroe. I'm glad you're with us today. Our goal on Central Coast Voices is to bring you credible and valid information and insights from diverse members of our community. Central Coast Voices wants to address how today's choices will affect tomorrow's community and how we look at the long-term ramifications of change, and sometimes that means the ramifications of lack of change in our society, especially how it affects the Central Coast. Even though we look at state and national issues as they tie together with us, oftentimes we're looking at things the way we should be, which is what's going on in our own neighborhood, what's going on in the communities we live in or the communities that surround us. Today we're going to talk about combating homelessness. California's homeless population has grown. It's become an increasingly big concern in communities. Last year's point in time survey, which we can explain to you at some point what that is from my guests, we'll talk about it, what a point in time survey is, of the homeless population showed that there were more than 130,000 homeless people in the state of California. And that is about one quarter of the homeless population of the entire United States. Contributing to the problem in California is, of course, the well-known chronic shortage of affordable housing. And that's an issue we want to look at because it goes hand in hand with a lot of this. And we want to work to address what's going on in California. And how to do that has been part of a California program called the Homeless Emergency Aid Program, HEAP. And that is what has had about a $500 million block grant initiative put toward it to help local communities address homeless as a crisis. And earlier this year in San Luis Obispo County, the county's Homeless Services Oversight Council was tasked with deciding how to distribute about $4.8 million in grant funding that can be used and received from the state and used locally, and how that funding will be distributed. It's something that is being effectively looked at by people who are truly paying attention. And I have to say this quite candidly because I know a lot of people involved in it. It is not a bunch of bureaucrats just figuring out where to throw money. It is actually people who are paying attention to what services are needed and how we can best do that. And two of those people are my guest today. Jana Nichols is the executive director for the Five Cities Homeless Coalition, and John Fowler, who is the president and CEO of People Self-Help Housing. Today, we're going to look at how the overall funding program can be spread out and used, and discuss how collaborations between their agencies, other organizations, and throughout the county can look at this. But especially today, we're going to look at what's going on in South County of San Luis Obispo and projects there to really take a look at how to effectively address homeless needs, because it really is a community issue all over the county. But in some ways, and this is my comment, not my guests, I believe that South County over the years has kind of not gotten the attention it needs. There's been a lot of efforts up in the Atascadero area we will talk about, and also in San Luis Obispo, but the Five Cities area has been faced with a problem that hasn't been addressed as quickly and as thoroughly as it should have been. And that's not a reflection on my guests, because they're really here to make sure we do address it. This is a conversation you're welcome to take part in. The phone number is 805-781-3875. Please give us a call as early in the program as you are comfortable being part of the discussion. But I remind you, when we get back down to about the last 15 or 20 minutes of the program, it is sometimes difficult to get calls in and still cover all the material that we want to look at. So please join us if you can, as early as you can. Jana, I'm going to start with you with one question, because the Five Cities Homeless Coalition is a project that, for a lot of people, the name may be known, and its name to some extent is pretty self-explanatory. But for a lot of folks, they may not know what it is. That's not to discount what John Fowler's here to talk about, but everybody seems to know about People Self-Help Housing. A lot of people don't know about the Five Cities Homeless Coalition. So jump in and tell us.
So we are just 10 years old. We are celebrating our 10th anniversary this year. And our focus is obviously addressing the needs of those who are homeless we're facing homelessness in South County. So our focus predominantly is Avila to Napomo, even though Five Cities is in our name. We do actually reach all the way to the river. We have two very clear messages for the community and for the clients that we serve. So one of the things that we are working towards is the question I ask the staff on a daily basis, whatever service we're providing, is will something be different tomorrow than today? So we are very much about focusing on helping people get back into their home or to retain their home. And so much of what we do is focused in moving people forward and assisting them with whatever crisis or challenges that they have. But if it's not going to move someone forward, we have to really take a serious look at why we would be doing that activity. The other is we have about a third of the county's homelessness in South County, and there are very few resources. One of our goals, obviously Coalition is in our name, is to try to strengthen that service network, not only in South County but countywide, and work with the community at all levels to try to address what you have indicated is a growing and really difficult challenge for the community, not only for those that are homeless, but for those in the community who are experiencing either the economic impacts or the personal impacts.
Yeah. John, the homeless population that I think the average person has a vision of is, from my experience and talking with you folks, talking with people from Echo, things like that, is there's a presumption that for the average person in the population who is thinking about homeless people, paying attention to them but doesn't know about them or provide volunteer services or services within that community, thinks of the homeless person as an ex-burned out druggie that has never had a job or not had one for years, probably mostly a single male with no family connections and no kids. And I pick those examples because I believe the exact opposite is most true when we're dealing with and looking at the homeless population in San Luis County, if not statewide.
Yeah, it is. There's a sort of a stereotype, if you will, out there for homelessness, and there's some fears in the community about that. But clearly, homelessness can happen to anyone, and you hear this all the time. By the grace of God, go I. Someone gets ill, someone loses their job, family situations. I mean, homelessness has all kinds of faces, and genders, and age, and what have you, and so it's a lot of different people.
The number of families, the number of small children seems to be on the rise in that part of the population. And I don't know if it's really on the rise or it has more to do with maybe what I happen to have seen. I've been connected to Echo up in Atascadero on and off as a volunteer. And their efforts have focused as much as they can on families because the homeless children is a tough place to be. Nobody deals well with homelessness, but children who seem to have the least amount of dominion over whether or not it's happening to them are also the most affected by it. So it does seem like there's been quite an increase in that population.
So homelessness is defined in a lot of different ways, but for the CMR school district, which covers most of South County, they have about 800 to 1,000 students who are characterized by the Department of Education as homeless. Most of those are families living doubled up. And if a child doesn't have a permanent stable place to call home, they are considered homeless by the Department of Education, which is a little different than how HUD defines them, which says they have to be street homeless. But speaking specifically about children, if you don't have a permanent, stable place from which to live, then the learning outcomes are dramatically different. And there have been plenty of studies about poor kids or poor kids that have no home And the poor kids that have no home are doubly challenged in terms of any of life's successes. So certainly that is a group that is really of concern to us. And what we see is a predominance of people having to spend a longer period of time out of the house when they become homeless. So because of the housing shortage that John is trying to battle, we are seeing people living in their cars or living on the streets longer. And that has then a compounding effect when children are involved. We just housed a family this week. The child was 6 months old when they lost their housing. And so they've been living in their car now for 2.5 years. And the beauty was when we gave them the keys and showed them the new apartment, the 3-year-old goes running around the house saying, "This is a house? I get to live in this? This is a house?" I mean, he was just thrilled, right? But he didn't know anything other than that until that moment. And now we have, and that family, they're working. There's nothing more than income that particular family is battling. So, you know, when we look at that and we say, okay, this child, he's stably housed, but I'm worried about the child that isn't, right? Because we know what the flip side is, and they've got 2 strikes against them before they ever reach the doorstep.
Well, and as you're talking about that particular individual, that particular child, what occurred to me from some experience of some homeless work I've done is the number of kids who, if they're school age, and if they're getting some attention from the community and their family is being diligent about the best they can about keeping them in school, a lot of those kids are walking around flat out embarrassed on a daily basis that their peers are going to know they're homeless. I'll share with you an incident that comes to mind because I've spent a number of years working with the Jewish community in San Luis Obispo County does a dinner for Christmas over at the Odd Fellows Hall every year. Somewhere between 300 and 400 people, homeless or people in need of a decent meal, show up for that. They make a very good point of volunteers that work with that, who are some people who are families with their kids, of not letting the children who are working as volunteers out on the floor of the dining experience, because they have found, and I have witnessed this happen before, that there are children who are in line for food who turned around and left because there was a kid working on the event that they knew from school and that was an embarrassment they couldn't handle. Adults may have run into people that they knew from the community, because if you're out in the community, even as a homeless person, you run into a lot of people, and you run into people that lots of times are people who would be helpful in that situation. But for kids, it's a traumatic experience that no one should have to live through.
Well, I would say homelessness is a traumatic experience that no one should have to live through. I mean,
good point. Yeah. The minute I said that, it became quite clear that I should have probably dismissed that comment from my own mouth before I did.
But I will even tell you, we at our winter warming center, we have volunteers come in to help serve meals or help us with the winter sheltering. And, you know, they will say, "Oh, I went to school with that person. I went to high school with that person." I mean, the other misnomer is that everybody thinks that the homeless are from someplace else, and they're not. They are of our community. They've grown up here. And that is always made very clear to us with our volunteers that come in and work with our clients, because they say, "Well, oh, I know him. I know her. Oh, you know." And there is, even at that age, obviously, that I'm sorry for you.
And that's a surprise that we always see in our housing as well, is that, you know, we'll go in and do an affordable housing project in a community, and the city council, whatever the community, say, "We want this for our own residents." And there's some fair housing rules and stuff. And we say, well, we can't really exclude people. But what we can tell you is it'll all be local people who live right here for the most part are going to be in this housing because they're here already. They're already working. They're already, you know, their families are here. And so it is a misnomer about, you know, who are we providing services to? It's to our own neighbors, our own friends, our own, you know.
Yeah, that's a very good point because as you're both talking about that, my thought is no one would choose San Luis Obispo County as the place to be homeless if they have some mobility. I'll get in trouble for this, but I'll pick a town. Okay, it's probably a heck of a lot cheaper to be homeless in Wasco than it is to be homeless in San Luis Obispo or Santa Barbara County. I mean, this is a very expensive place to live. Under ideal circumstances, it's got to be incredibly challenging for that population. So the people who are here because they may have, they already have a community connection or they weren't homeless here a year ago. And I think that comes into play also. John, can you tell me what part people's self-help housing plays in this? Because my knowledge of your product is mostly it's affordable housing,
right,
and some projects where people can do some sweat equity building for ownership. So I'm wondering what factors people's self-help housing is bringing to the table as far as working with the homeless population.
Yeah, so great question, Fred, and I appreciate that. So, you know, we've been around, just to give a little bit, we've been around for 49 years doing affordable housing, and that really was been defined previously as basically an income qualification. So somebody making 30% of area median income up to roughly 60-ish area median income. And these are people who need a little bit of help. They can't really, they aren't making enough to afford rent. And so we were doing that. And we're the housing piece. We're a developer. We build houses. That's what we do. And we started out doing, helping people do sweat equity and build their own homes. And then we eventually got into multifamily and apartment complexes. So ours is, hey, we're a professional builder who comes in and provides a roof and an opportunity for a certain economic thing, resident. And then what we found out, just putting it, I think you alluded to, once we found out that you couldn't just give somebody a roof and say, have a nice life. It all of a sudden said,
good way to word it.
That might not be enough. And so we got into case management and actually helping people budget and deal with domestic issues and addictions and things that they – so we started to say, how can we keep them housed and help them, you know, to get to that next level and sort of break that cycle of poverty? So it kind of said, well, we're not really in the social work, but we sort of need to do that. And then we got into an after-school program, and we run a very robust, really ribbon-cutting after-school program. But what we found is – that's really where our expertise lies. And so then we looked at and said, what are the other nonprofits, the other collaborators that then, you know, are specialists in, you know, shelters or warming centers or, you know, youth transition and some of the things. So we looked at what Janet was doing in the Five Cities area specifically. And as you know, we're in three counties. So we're spread out over Santa Barbara, San Luis Obispo, and Ventura counties. But when we looked at who are the partners that should be in the Five Cities area, obviously Janet and the Five Cities was the partner saying, we don't do what Janet does and we don't do what other nonprofits do. So let's bring our expertise. Let's collaborate. Let's figure out, because they need more than housing. How do they get to housing? How do you get to the case management? How do you get the job training? All the other things that are necessary. And it, as they say, it takes a village or a lot of nonprofits. So when Jen and I have been working together, our agency has been working together for years, and her residents, her clients come, and many of them get housed in ours. And that's a great feeder and an opportunity for us to be the next step in what Jen has been trying to do, housing. Because we know that housing is the key to, you know, to breaking this, to getting it done.
A good portion of homeless services in this county over the years, with very good intentions, have, from my experience and understanding, been focused on the fact that homeless people are, in a lot of cases, are just seen as, oh, they're going to remain homeless, so we can just find some stopgap for the moment because next month, next year, they'll still be homeless. And I think what what you're talking about and what's going on in North County and San Luis County also, or North County and San Luis Obispo, is an effort to break that cycle. In 2 weeks, hopefully the way the schedule works out, we'll actually have some folks from North County on the same topic, I believe, in 2 weeks. But we know that ECHO has a real goal of trying to create an environment where people are only in their facility for 90 days, ideally, is a max, and in some cases up to 180 days. So I think breaking that cycle is something that I believe both of you are addressing, and you may want to talk about that a little more.
Well, let me talk a little bit about the rapid rehousing program that we have at Five Cities. So while our focus is on Five Cities, this particular program is a countywide program. So, in fact, we have a staff member embedded up with ECHO receiving referrals from North County. But the intent of a rapid rehousing program is to look at what are the barriers, and if they are relatively few, I mean, if it's income, if it's not understanding financial literacy and how to budget or making a difference in terms of utilizing community resources and stretching that dollar, but if it's primarily an income issue and helping them navigate that process, help them get a better job, etc., we're gonna try to get them into housing and. In our rapid rehousing program, our success rate is 95%. People remain housed at least a year after they have left our services, at least 95% of the time. And in most cases, that's just the beginning. So we, for their long-term housing stability, either because we have been able to get them into a unit that may be affordable, such as one of John's units, or we've been able to work with them to improve their income either through job development or disability income if we can help them qualify that way.
Yeah. I want to remind folks that we are talking about combating homelessness. We're focused on housing as a key issue in the efforts of the Five Cities Homeless Coalition and People Self-Help Housing today. If you'd like to be part of this discussion, the phone number is 805-781-3875. That's 781-3875. We'd like you to be part of the discussion if you choose to be, or you can just listen, and hopefully we're answering some of the questions you have. We have done a very good job for the first third of the program to avoid talking about the conflicts that are going on based upon some services decisions that the coalition is making in the Five Cities area. I believe we may not want to talk about them, but we probably have to discuss them. So Jana, I would send this to you. There was a Board of Supervisors meeting about a week and a half ago, I guess, that addressed some of the funding goals that you have and a facility that you're working on. Can you give us some background on that?
Sure. So I think you mentioned early on when we started the program that South County has, if you will, not gotten its fair share. And I don't mean that in a prejudicial way. I just mean there is a lack of services for homeless programs in South County. And over the years, we have struggled. We used to have a job one-stop there. It's no longer there. We used to have a youth employment and drop-in center there. It's no longer there. We don't have a shelter in South County. We had a rather robust case management program with CAPSLO, and through a lack of federal funding, they lost that program. And so South County has been challenged for services across the board for a long time. And I do want to give a shout out to the faith community because I believe that they have really filled that gap in many, many ways over the years and continue to do that, particularly around food provision, but certainly in other ways. So from the coalition standpoint, we have looked to try to identify what services there are in South County, what services there are in other parts of the county, how we can maximize use of those resources. So we work very closely with CAPSLO, and we work very closely with ECHO and many other partners. And then we've tried to fill the gap with some of our programs, saying, "All right, we have a gap here. No one is addressing this." And fundamentally, it's come down to kind of three things. One is Five Cities Homeless Coalition does not have a permanent location for its services. We are on a lease. It's periodically up for renewal. And so wouldn't it be nice if we had a permanent home that we could say we owned and we didn't have to worry about whether we were going to renew our lease the next time it came around. The other is there is a growing population, and we touched a little bit on it, of youth nationwide, but certainly in our county, who are homeless, and it's a growing population. So these, we call them transitional age youth. They're 18 to 24, and there's just this bubble that's growing across the country.
Some of them are people who've aged out of foster care.
There's that population, but there's another group that never was in foster care. They were with their parents, but their parents were homeless, and so they're still homeless. Or they got into a relationship and they got pregnant and mom and dad didn't like that. Or they may have had some other issue. But regardless, there is this growing population that there are very few services for. And I think Five Cities is one of the very few agencies here in the county that has any real targeted program. And we said, if there's a way to address it even better, we'd like to do that. I mean, Cuesta College just did a housing survey, and 50 of their students said that they were homeless. So, I mean, this is a population we need to be concerned about because it is our community's future tomorrow. And then lastly, there is not enough housing in the county, certainly in South County, and that's where we look to...
John's working on it.
Right, well, that's where we look to
working
people's
on it, Janet.
Self-help and said, you know, could we create more housing? And so we had an opportunity with a local church that indicated a willingness to sell, and so we went from there.
And I think that, you know, just to back up a step, if we could, with that as well, Fred, to talk about, you know, the hardest thing to get affordable housing, and we've never done affordable housing in Grover Beach, by the way. We've done it in Oro Grande, Pismo Beach. I mean, we've got it everywhere, Avila Beach, anywhere you look, but never in Grover Beach. The hardest problem we have for getting affordable housing is finding a site that will actually work and works with the funders and actually finding the funding. And that's why we started to look at this. And so Peoples came to the table because, you know, there was an opportunity to do affordable housing. Obviously, the collaboration we're already doing with Five Cities Coalition was important. But we also looked and said, this is a nonprofit that has been for 10 years looking for a home, you know, and maybe, and we're a developer. We're, you know, what we do is build and develop, and is that we need to add some expertise and support to what Five Cities is doing. It's clearly a need. And I think that when you looked at what went before the board, what went for the advisory group, HSOC and others, there's no question in anyone's mind about the need, about, you know, who we're trying to serve or the quality of services or the attempt that we're doing. None of that is a question. But the hardest part we have, obviously, is finding a site and finding funding. And when those two came available for Jan and I, we go, wow, this is something we need to jump on and jump on very quickly.
Okay. So you're talking about some clarification, a site for some affordable housing, but I think, Jana, you're also talking about a site to provide interim services for homeless population.
Right. So the church that we are attempting to purchase, and for which the County Board of Supervisors made an award of the HEAP funding, is a parcel that has existing buildings and some undeveloped land. So we are looking, from the coalition standpoint, to move in with permanent offices to do our coordinated entry, to do our housing navigation services, case management, etc. And then we are also looking to develop what I would call transitional housing up to 24 months for this youth population that I've talked about, so that we can help them not only have a stable place from which then to launch, to look at education, to look at a job, that sort of thing.
Let's go back and revisit that in a moment. We've got Ben, thanks for your patience. Ben from Arroyo Grande. What are your thoughts here? You're on
well,
the air.
Am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh, thank you. First of all, I'd just like to thank the Five Cities Homeless Coalition and People Self-Help Housing for the the good work that they do in the community. And I think it's, 100% people are behind everything that they're doing, and we certainly see the need. I live a few blocks from the proposed facility, and I think most of the controversy essentially comes down to the non-residential portion of that project. I think all of us in the neighborhood, of course, understand there's a need for more housing for the homeless and the at-risk of homeless. But it's really that non-residential significant portion of the project that we're concerned about. You know, the referral, coordinated entry, jail to community, case management, you know, that sort of implies a lot of walk-in services, you know, and then people, you know, kind of, you know, leaving on foot. And, you know, I think understandably the neighbors have some concerns. And I just wonder if the guests, have any ideas about how those concerns can be addressed.
Well, I think there's a couple of ways. Thank you, Ben, for your call. So in addition to, I think, looking at what services are offered there, I think we can also look at how we ask people to come to the facility, what the routes are that we just basically tell them as we're talking to them, why don't you come up Oak Park and hang a turn on Newport, because I think that minimizes some of the neighborhood concerns. But the other is, I think we're open to looking at monitoring situations. We certainly would like to have a robust conversation with the neighborhood in terms of a coalition of neighbors working with us, trying to monitoring that. I think that, we have some ability to work with our other providers to potentially mitigate who's coming when. Where do we do those intakes? So I think there's a lot of opportunities for discussion about how we do that work and what work we do there versus other places in the community. And that's certainly something that I have been thinking about and I know that we've been discussing with our board is, where can we, if there's an opportunity to assuage some concerns and if it's really the unknown person coming into the neighborhood, then I think we need to have a conversation about how we can address that.
Yeah, and I think that, we obviously believe that, more eyes and more professional services on site will help address what may be existing there currently. And, Jen and I do this, and we have done this for a number of years, and so we understand this population and how to do it, what we can do with services, whether the intake or other things could be done some other location. Everything can be done for a price. It gets expensive when you start doing that, obviously, but it's been something that Jan and I have talked about. What really needs to be on this site? What makes sense? What's a way to try and find some common ground with your on this particular site? And while we've yet to find that necessarily, I think we continue to give it the effort.
Yeah, Ben, this is Fred. Let me. I'd like to step in, and I do the best job I can to keep my opinion out of a direct topic like this. And having said that, I want to make the following observation. Having lived in Atascadero and been a volunteer on a number of occasions with Echo up there, the concern that you're talking about has existed around Echo historically. I would encourage you maybe if you want to look and see how services are handled and how the population handles it, you may want to visit the Echo. That's El Camino Homeless Association Organization in Atascadero. The Echo facility sits between residential housing, about 150 or 200 feet away from the entrance to the Atascadero High School, and across the street from a K-12 Christian day school, with a tremendous amount of residential around it beyond that. And I think you would be pleasantly surprised to see that the number of homeless that are on the street near that project, on a daily basis, there are few of them there, more of them hanging out in front of the Rite Aid, which is a half a mile away, than you see at Echo. So that's my observation of the circumstances. What does or doesn't work for you, my opinion should not be part of that. But have the guests addressed at this point, at least your understanding at this point?
Yeah, no, I definitely appreciate the fact that they are listening to the concerns of the neighborhood. And, you know, we're definitely here to talk about those concerns and see, you know, see if we can come together to fully address them. I know a number of my neighbors just don't think the commercial sort of nature of, you know, and I only use the term commercial. I know it's a nonprofit, but, you know, it is right in a residential neighborhood, R1, you know, very low-density housing. And, you know, I think no matter what the service is being offered, there would be concerns about that type of commercial activity in the neighborhood. So I certainly appreciate their willingness to talk with the neighborhood about what's concerning us. So okay. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Ben. I appreciate it.
Okay. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. Yeah.
This is obviously the discussion you have both faced from day one, I guess. Are there plans to look at the property differently than you've been looking at it to this point to address some of these concerns?
I think, you know, we do, as Jenna said and as Ben said, that, you know, we continue to be open to talking about this. But as I shared with you, that, you know, finding a piece of property and finding a source are our two top challenges. And when those come together, you know, Jan and I tend to focus on that and then figure out, you know, what can really be accomplished and how can we mitigate and do those kinds of things. So so I would say at this point, we continue to be open to talking with the community there, particularly, and talking about what does that foot traffic look like. And I think that those discussions, as Ben mentioned, have been fruitful. They haven't been easy conversations. But if we continue to dialogue, I think where the commonalities, I think, is what we're trying to look at. And the commonality is we all agree that the issue is important and needed, and that housing is fine. And that what Jana does and what Peoples does is great stuff and to be commended. And so it's like, so where is the rub? And if we can focus on what are the true challenges with this site, and if it's the foot traffic, what can be done to mitigate that? And Jana and I can come up with some solutions, but they might not be the solutions that the community is looking for. So that dialogue is really important. So when I hear someone like Ben speaking and saying, let's continue to look for a difficult, because we have funding, we have great, you know, service providers, we have many things, and we do need affordable housing. So I think those dialogues have gotten us to the point of, I think, Jana, would you say that we're okay with affordable housing, possibly even some transitional housing there. It's really dealing with the commercial uses of that site, Jana's commercial offices there, and the foot traffic. You know, there's been a lot of other stuff that's been thrown on, you know, that we're going to have a water tank fall down and it's going to take out the city, or, you know, of course, you know, that's silly. The city and there's engineering and we're not going to, you know, that's going to happen. But how can we get to whether really are the deal breakers, if you will, that are really the rubs for the community, the things that they're really concerned about, and see if we can't collaboratively find some solution to that as opposed to just not here, you know, someplace else.
I have to ask the question. I mean, I'm not sure if that was a hypothetical example or there actually is a concern about a water tank there.
It has been sort of elevated in the last few days that, you know, it's a dangerous situation, that there's a huge water tank on the top of this hill, and that if we dig into the hill that we're somehow going to, that water tower is going to be undermined and will give way and we'll take out. So, of course, that, you know, will never happen. Yeah. But it scares people who, hey, maybe that could happen, you know, and I'm kind of downstream. And so we're finding some, you know, some concerns that.
Having served prior to moving to Atascadero about 15 years ago on the city council in Grover Beach for 8 years, I have to interject that there is a water tank above some very high-end housing on Oak Park just before it goes down the hill towards the freeway that you really can't see very well because they put trees around it. But I would say that, there are more water tanks like that everywhere than people may be aware of.
Right.
But, okay, we'll leave that. I'm sorry. Jenna, so the facility is currently a church, was a church?
It is currently a church. Okay. It's owned by the Christian Missionary Alliance. They owned it, I think, for, I don't know, 5 or 10 years. I'm not sure exactly how long. It was formerly the Bethel Baptist Church. They themselves have had a variety of programs targeted to the homeless and as part of their church mission over the years, and have hosted us with our warming center in the winters for the last 2 winters, this year and the year prior, and have been supportive throughout the history of the coalition. They've hosted many meetings even before I even joined the coalition. A number of our formation meetings were being held there. So it is there. It has been a church. It remains a church. And it's been part of the community. So it's been, you know, it's been a place of where people have come to assemble for many, many years.
Okay. You mentioned having used it for the last two winters as a warming center. Candid question I'd like a straight answer to, and not that I would suggest that you wouldn't give me a straight answer. Sorry for wording it that way. Has the existence of a warming center there, which is more of a truly transitional or transitory environment, caused problems for the neighborhood?
Well, I think I can answer that two different ways from two different perspectives. We have been there for the last 2 winters. We have had multiple calls for service for health-related issues. We've had very few calls for service for safety issues, actually at the site. And when we have talked with Aurora Grandy and Grover Beach PD about the nights that the shelter is open, predominantly calls for service around homeless-related issues collectively goes down in the community because people are sheltered. So that said, and there doesn't seem to be a demonstration of increased calls for service in the neighborhood. That said, one of the things that we have certainly heard from the neighbors as we've been speaking to them is they have had concerns, but they haven't necessarily made calls to the PD. So on the one hand, I would say I think we've done a reasonable job in the last 2 winters of curtailing any concerns, and yet the community has expressed that there have been some. And so that's, I think, where the dialogue needs to happen, which is if we had known there was a problem, we might have been able to address it, but we didn't know we had the problem. So I guess I'm answering the question both ways, which is, from our perspective, we think we've done a pretty good job. From the neighborhood perspective, I think they still have concerns.
Has that conversation given you, given the community an opportunity to tell you about situations that they did not tell you about that you weren't aware of?
They have. I don't have a lot of specifics, and so it's sometimes difficult to know, well, we found this. Well, when did you find this? You know, was the warming center even open? Did it have anything related to us or not? And the other is, for example, I did have someone call me in January and say, you know, I'm seeing increased trash. Well, I don't know if it was my trash or somebody else's trash, but she believed it was trash as a result of the neighborhood or as a result of the warming center. So we got our staff out there and we made sure that we were picking up trash every morning. Again, the cause and effect is a little difficult sometimes to track, but if we can work with the neighborhood and address the issues, we are most open to doing that.
And the deal is not to just work with them to try and get something there, but to work with them ongoing. So if there are issues going on after we're there, we want to know about those things and clean up the neighborhood, or you know, tighten up our programs or whatever we need to do to be a good neighbor and to make it a safe neighborhood. You know, Jen and I, we believe we're bringing solutions to that neighborhood, not making it worse. That wouldn't serve anybody's purpose.
Yeah. Have you thought about, or do you have one, some kind of advisory or information body for if you happen to be a resident that lives within X distance of the property, making sure that you have a list of who those people are who might have concerns, and maybe putting together a community advisory board of your neighbors about that?
Okay, I think twofold. One is we have been keeping track of folks that have been talking to us, and we have a list of that, and I think the neighborhood group also has tracked some information in terms of creating that. I most definitely want to make sure that we have a neighborhood advisory group, and I want to set whatever that good neighbor policy is that we can all agree on in terms of our responsibilities. But I most definitely want a neighborhood advisory group to work with us to say, hey, can we do this? Is this working? Is this not working? What else is going on? That sort of thing. I think it would be incumbent upon us to do that.
So after the last Board of Supervisors meeting, where on a split vote, but a majority vote, you received the funding that you thought you could receive, as I understand it, What's the next step for you folks, and where does it go from here?
I think our next step is to continue to do the community outreach. We're hoping to actually meet with the community again very soon. We've done a couple of concept things at City Hall, a couple of City Council meetings, but we've also done a couple of community outreaches, and we want to continue to dialogue with the community to see if we can't, find a way, because there's a lot of commonality and a lot of belief that, the need is there. If we can figure out how to do that and to do that safely and allay some of the fears about tanks falling or the wrong people, the wrong traffic in the neighborhood, or how do we create neighborhood watch and other things. Jen and I do these at all of our locations. I mean, this is normal for us to be a great neighbor, to have more eyes and to have great relationships with the police department and all those things, and provide the case management and the services. So the next step is really to hire the architect and begin something beyond concept. In other words, start to see what this building can be done, what are the costs and what have you. So what we would hope to do is hire an architect very shortly and begin that process and get in front of the Grover Beach staff with that.
You'll be able to expand your services there in the facility that exists already shortly. What kind of timeline are you looking at for having some long-term housing on the property?
So the housing obviously takes a long time because it takes a lot of money, and obviously there's a lot of development approval process, and anybody who's done any development on the Central Coast knows that might take a year or so. So the housing obviously is not going to come.
I would say a year or so is probably on the short end of that, John.
And that's correct, Fred. I was trying to be nice because, we get along well with all the jurisdictions. I want to continue after this radio show. But our projects normally take 3 to 5 years for the affordable housing component, and Jen and I know that. So there's some existing buildings that obviously can be made ready for offices and some other things that can be done because they're existing facilities, getting that done and then working towards the transitional housing and designing that. And that's also obviously is going to be some rehab work and some architectural work. So, it's going to be a very long process that hopefully we can immediately get some uses out of the existing facilities, working towards the longer term solutions, which would be the affordable housing component on the back.
Is the funding for you, Jenna, going to allow you to accelerate some of the things that you were waiting to see about? I mean, things that you literally can do in the next 3 to 6 months that were on the warmer but not going anywhere until you knew where your funding sources were.
Well, since the funding doesn't happen until at least July 1st, the 3 to 6 months is no. The component that is most interested, that's most incumbent upon us to work on, is the issue with regard to this transitional age youth population. And so while we want to create this transitional housing for them, we also have plans to expand our case management outreach and housing supports. And so, you know, what else can we do? Can we create a host home program, not unlike a college or high school exchange program, where we would pay homes a stipend to host?
Yeah. We used to have rooming houses. Rooming houses don't exist anymore.
They don't. So I'm calling it a host home program instead. But it's basically, you know, think of your high school exchange student coming and staying in one of your homes and getting a small stipend to host them. So there's a couple of things that we're working on now in that regard to begin the accelerated process. The other is with regard to the transitional housing. There are some model programs across the state and elsewhere, and we have visited one or two of them now. Kind of thinking about the concept of it, but we have our work cut out for us in terms of really wanting to make sure that we are putting the program legs in place to really make it not only a robust but very successful program. And so we've got some visits to and some consultation with some other agencies to do here over the summer to really make sure that we're on the track to do what we want to do in a very effective way.
The property is in Grover Beach.
Correct.
Okay. But it's right on the line between Grover Beach and Arroyo Grande, as I understand it.
Correct.
Google works real well to figure out where things are. Thank you. It is the city of Grover Beach has official jurisdiction. Our city council and city staff in Arroyo Grande looking at ways to help address some of their concerns, because I'm sure they have citizens that may feel like they're not part of the discussion.
Absolutely, and that came up at one of the city council that Jan and I attended at Arroyo Grande, that you know there was a whole public outreach to that effort on that the council did, and the council notified staff that hey, we're on the sphere of influence here on this particular site, and we want to be at the table. And we also know that the city of Grover Beach very much wants the Arroyo Grande to weigh in and have some say about this. So those communications, those announcements, all that interface will happen, and when the project comes forward.
Yeah. As our listeners know, I usually make sure that I get out of the way for at least a couple of minutes at the end so you don't get me meddling in the conversation. So, John, what would you like to make sure that people understand and are aware of with regard to the efforts of People Self-Help Housing in this project?
Well, we've been around for a long time, that we sort of know how to do what we do. And I think, hopefully that's generally accepted, as you mentioned early on the program, of what we do, that we're trying to bring solutions to not only this neighborhood, but this, the whole Five Cities area and this particular project. And that we really are listening, we're taking it to heart, we're trying to hear what are the true concerns and can they be mitigated with this community. And if we can get on the same page and bring a consorted effort to this, all pulling together, that's really what we're looking for. And so that would be my message, is remain open. It's always a problem for us when we do our development. There's a certain amount of zoning or other things that, we don't get handed beautiful sites that are in downtown wherever. We normally get a site that's troubled, and it usually has, in fact, there's one that we're looking at. Somebody said we should pivot to. Well, it's got hazardous materials on it that, how bad is the hazardous? We've dealt with that. So I guess I would say that we're continuing to look for alternatives. It does cost money. It does take time. There's a real need for affordable housing, obviously, and the services that Janice team provides. And so help us figure this out as a community and not, sort of have be scared things that, a water tower is going to fall down or we're going to bust people in from the prison and into this neighborhood. Or, these are scare tactics that simply aren't true. And, if we can really get to the substantive issues and really have adult conversations, that would be really great.
Great. Thank you, John. Jana?
This is not community building is not easy, and certainly addressing homelessness is not not an easy thing. I think it's what I would ask for the community to do is kind of threefold, and many of the neighbors who've expressed concerns have actually done this, and I'm most appreciative of that, which is truly try to understand the complexity of what we're dealing with. And that as diverse as our community is, we have that diversity of challenges with those who are homeless or facing homelessness. And so it's not just one bite of the apple. It's there's a lot of different things going on here. And so to follow up on what John said, you know, what are those critical pieces that we need to talk about to figure out? And, you know, for 10 years, the coalition's been trying to figure it out. We've been talking with our community leaders to figure it out. We've had the support of the faith community. But this is not easy. And we have a national problem. We have 25% of the nation's homeless in California. So we have small communities such as Aurora Grande, Pismo Beach, Grover Beach, trying to address this really big issue on very few dollars. And so how do we come together as a community to solve it? If I ask you for a food drive, you'll be there for me. But on a larger scale, we have to come together as community to address it. Otherwise, we won't figure it out.
And I also want to mention, you know, if I could, Fred, that there are a number of people in this neighborhood and beyond that are very supportive. I mean, we hear from them. So there is a tremendous amount of support, for this project at this site. It's just not everyone, obviously, and there's a lot of voices to be listening to.
Yeah, good point. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I want to remind our listeners that I'll tell you what Chris Kington is doing next week. Chris Kington Barker's show is next week. But 2 weeks from now, if the schedule continues to maintain itself the way it is and guests are available, we're going to have a similar discussion about what's going on in North County on the same topic, but how it's affecting North County and how they're addressing it. And that's a good factor to bring into the mix. We'll talk about that in 2 weeks. Next week, Chris Kington is going to have a very interesting show. The title of the show is actually Teen Monologues, and she's going to be joined by some people with Capslow, and they actually have put on a program. They've composed a series of monologues and scenes called Teen Monologues. It's based on interviews and surveys with local teens and teen parents. And they started doing this in 2013, and they turned it into a theatrical experience. It literally is going to be a theatrical experience. And Chris has talked about it before, but you're going to get to talk about it next week, and it should be a fascinating program. So you can join Chris Kington Barker with her guests talking about teen monologues next week. Want to remind you that Action for Healthy Communities is our sponsor and supporting organization as part of the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. You can see our report with regard to the status of things in the county at actionslo.org. And thank you also to KCBX for their continued support and joint efforts with us. You can reach us voices@kcbx.org if you have any feedback about the program, or 805-543-2323. I want to thank my guests today, Jana Nichols and John Fowler, for giving us really an insightful look at homeless issues in the South County. This has been Central Coast Voices. Have a good day.